Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on homeschool when we come back. You know, if you earn $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce. And your government gets 60%. Now, that's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and then produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year, and you're going to net 25% instead of 40, and the government will net 75% instead of 60. That means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more, or 8% more. Isn't that special? You produce 100% more and get 8% of it. And that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. Now, that's why I contend there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only get 25% of it. Why don't you call today and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. Let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information that'll answer many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is we pay so much and receive so little. And let me show you how to do just that in our Tax and Status School, which is now available on compact disc for adult homeschool. Now, to order your free general law CD package, just call and ask for it. You can call direct, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org. And then go to the archives page and you can download it. Home school. That's an odd subject. You know that? 50 million students attend public school, and about 4 million American children are now being homeschooled. 20 or 30 years ago, homeschool would have been a crime. People were being jailed for educating their children at home. Today, it's not only acceptable, it's mainstream. Just 10 years ago, in the late 1990s, there were about 1, maybe 2 million children in homeschool. We didn't know exactly. It was by guess and by golly, because they're not registered anywhere. I mean, after all, if you're educating your child at home, we don't have an attendance record every day like we have in public school. So they can tell you how many children are in public school. And the Catholic school can tell you how many they've got. The Baptist schools can tell you how many they've got. And there isn't anybody out there that can tell you with precision as to how many people are educating their children at home because it's not being recorded. But there are guesstimates and there are numbers and polls that are taken. And so we've got a pretty significant number, 4 million. Why do people want to educate their children at home? They're paying property tax to pay for those schools down the street. And then you want to educate your kid at home and waste your tax money? Well, home education at its best is seldom well understood by writers and even by many within the homeschooling movement. As the one whose research is generally credited for the founding of this fast-growing educational phenomenon, I would like to clarify a few crucial points about homeschooling. Although homeschooling plays a key role among most homeschool families, religion is no longer the overriding reason for homeschooling, but rather quality education and family togetherness. Now, remarks by the National School Board Association's Anne Bryant, the National Education Association, and others about homeschoolers losing rich academic and social lives and a need for more research are pitifully uninformed. Homeschooling is today the most widely researched educational field. Now, as a former city school superintendent, university, and U.S. Department of Education research officer, I found that a key problem with our schools is that they reject research. For example, all educators know that boys lag a year or two behind girls in maturity. And yet every state mandates boys into school at the same age as girls. And the result is that there are about 10 boys to every girl in Ritalin special education. Most are learning delayed. They are not learning disabled. And we are gross practitioners of child abuse in our public schools. In achievement and socialization, homeschool significantly excels conventional schools in every one of our 50 states. Now, we don't claim perfection, but Idaho homeschool students, for example, average 87% compared with the national norm of 50%. And a few years ago, Idaho parents were being jailed for teaching at home, and the National Education Association claims that homeschools cannot compete in reading and math. But yet, standardized tests found in Idaho students that they scored at 88% in math and 89% in reading, and nationwide in socialization, 77.7% of homeschoolers average in the top quartile of the nation. So while the NEA, their students score at 50%, homeschool students in Idaho on average score 87, 88, and 89. Huh? Here's what the bitch is all about, boys and girls. The NEA is the nation's biggest teachers' union, and every child that leaves the public school system costs them $56 a day. That's the bottom line. Well, put another way, if every child in America was homeschooled, the NEA would cease to exist, wouldn't it? What would the need be? Now, the fellow that wrote that is Dr. Raymond S. Moore, and he wrote an article here called Research Shows the Benefits of Homeschooling. I thought we'd start off the discussion with homeschooling. Your child will score 60% higher in a homeschooled environment, in your homeschool, than he will in public school, even if you're a high school dropout. So if you're a parent, a single mother, a high school dropout, and you educate your child at home, a homeschool, your child, on average, will score 60% higher than any public school. Well, I shouldn't say any, but the average public school in America. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, remember, every teacher in America is a college graduate. Every teacher in America has a teaching credential. You couldn't get a job without those two. So we presume that the teachers of America are educated, quality, and specialized in their discipline, in their profession. And they are. And yet, the product that they turn out is 60% poorer than the product that will be turned out in your average homeschool. Now, remember, the average homeschool scores at, I believe, the 86th percentile. Average. The average public school scores at the 50th percentile. Now, the average homeschool teacher is not a college graduate, does not have a teaching credential, and is not an education specialist. Now, how do you like that? Now, there should be an explanation for that. Going on, Dr. Moore says, our Moore formula students get around. In their balance of study, work, and service, they spend half the day in business and serving their communities. NEA types also say they don't compete for college. With our Moore formula students, we have not had a rejection by the college of their choice since we started 25 years ago. Let me pause right there. The NEA says if your kid doesn't go to public school, he won't be able to go to college. Excuse me, boys and girls. About half the students in America who go to high school don't graduate. That's number one. All of those that don't graduate from high school do not go on to college. So first of all, coming out of the chute, half the students of America don't go to college that go to public school. But here in the Moore homeschool program, they haven't had one student rejected. Now, he said, I don't want to claim to be perfect, but if you haven't had one student rejected, isn't that about as good as it gets? How would you improve upon that? Now, I want to point out, you may be sitting there saying, well, I don't think I could teach my child at home. I'm not very smart. Well, the way this works is that we know you're not very smart. But you can teach your child at home with a homeschooling curriculum. You buy that. It isn't something that you come up with. You buy it and pay for it. And on average, it costs $546 per year per student. So if you've got one kid, it's $550 a year. If you got two, it's going to cost you $1,100 and so on up the line. Now, homeschooling is the cheapest way to educate a child. Here's the numbers. Homeschooling, $550 a year. Parochial school, $2,500 a year. Public school, $10,000 per year. Did you get those numbers down? Write them down, Mary, because when Tom comes home tonight, you are going to be amazed. He is going to be amazed. He's going to say, Mary, where did you learn it? He'll say, well, I was listening to Gordon today. And he cited that from Dr. Raymond S. Moore. And here's what it costs to educate a kid at home. $546 on average per year. And if you educate him down here at your local Catholic school, they're going to charge you about $2,500 a year. If you send the kid to public school, it's going to cost you $10,000. Now, the problem with this is that we're all going to pay the $10,000, like it or lump it, because we all have to pay our property tax, don't we? But you know, the fewer students that they have in the public school, then the less money they're going to tax. And so, in the end, it comes back and it benefits all of us. It benefits all of us because homeschool children actually make it to college. Public school children might or might not. Flip a coin. That's where the bottom line to that story is. On the contrary, he says, we're branded egocentric when we point to the highest averages of university scholarships. Our students are on full scholarships from Stanford to Harvard and on to Oxford and on Rhodes scholarships. Harvard gives us the edge for leadership, work, and service factors built into students. Bryan College, Boston University, and others advertise for them. Now, let me get that again. Bryan College, Boston universities, and other schools actually advertise and ask for homeschooled students to attend their colleges. On the other hand, the rich socialization privilege of the average school has been proven by many studies, instead to guarantee peer dependency, a social cancer in which students lose family closeness and values, and provide a precise breeding ground for drugs, ill-advised sex, and many other vices. Many public schools acknowledge this and have sought our help from Alaska and Hawaii to Florida and Ohio. Where's the drug problem in America? Now, where are the school shootings going on? When was the last time you heard about a homeschool shooting? All of these shootings take place in public schools. They don't allow it down at the local Catholic and Baptist schools, but they have school shootings, drugs, rape, all of the vices that you don't want, can't use, and shouldn't have are in public school, aren't they? All right, going on, he says, history and common sense confirm research. Home education has far more than its share of homeschoolers, from George Washington, Abigail Adams, Benjamin Franklin, and Abraham Lincoln. Tom Education and George Washington Carver and their like, who brought our nation to the world's highest literacy level when they dominated American education for more than two centuries. I'll pause right there. Listen to this again. Tom Education and George Washington Carver and their like, people like them, brought our nation to the world's highest literacy level when they dominated the American education system for more than two centuries. Did you see the latest report? We now score in the middle, number 16 in the world, in overall educational ability. We're no longer number one, we're number 16. The Chinese are number one. Well, at least the Chinese and Singapore are number one. Today, they're joined by farmers, congressmen, physicians, attorney generals, and average Marys and Joes to bring America back from only half the population who are functionally literate to historic levels at top 90%. The McDaniels family of Kent, Washington, See More Report International, July-August 1997, are more creative than many homeschoolers. They have largely worked out their own curriculum. And we're going to help them make it even more productive and fun by concentrating even more on their children's interests instead of following the typical cookie-cutter idea of making sure that all youngsters learn the same things. And they will hopefully complement their program with family, industries, and community service. It is the pressure from the states, as well as the tendency to teach the way they were taught, which causes homeschoolers to use the cookie cutter or sausage making technique that has driven most homeschoolers to use package curriculum, which burn out both parents and children. All right, so there's the introduction. I personally am in favor of using the cookie-cutter approach. I don't know that I'm competent and qualified to create a curriculum. I guess I could if I put my mind to it. But, you know, most of us have other things that we're doing in life, you know, like supporting our families. So we leave education then to the paid professionals down the street at the public school, and those fellows down at the public school have dropped the ball. They're dumbing us down. They're not smartening us up. And anybody that's got a half a brain and an IQ above 70 can see that. So the homeschool movement then is an answer, maybe not the only answer, but it is it is one answer to this public school morass: crime, drugs, poor education, poor abilities. And then I'll show you more of the problems that develop as we progress along, and better yet, the solution to it. So when we talk about this cookie-cutter curriculum, I actually just bought it. My wife went out and bought the curriculum, put it on the computer, and then we would direct our daughter to work on that computer. And in about 2 hours a day, she'd be finished with her schoolwork. She never spent 6, 7, 8 hours, never spent any time after school. She'd do her schoolwork when she felt like it. She could sleep till 10 o'clock in the morning if she wanted. and she could do her schoolwork at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And if she didn't want to do schoolwork today, she could do it tomorrow. And let me show you what the results were. When the girl was 12 years old, in the seventh grade level, here in Missouri, they require us to test these homeschooled children. And so, to follow the law, we sent her over to the Ludi school, and they sat her down, and they tested her. And guess what she tested at? She tested at just a little below first year college. 12-year-old girl, 7th grade, scored 12.6. If she'd have scored 13, she would have scored at the end of her first year in college. She scored at about the level that children score when they've entered college and they've been there for a few months. That was when she was 12 in the 7th grade. They never asked us again to test her. But get this. And when she got to be about sophomore in high school, we sent her to public school, over to Ludi School, so that we could balance her social education. I said, you have to live among people, and I want you to get used to the idea that these are the people you're going to live with. These are the people in your community. It's the Wallace boy, and it's the Udy girl, you know, and the Smith boy. Our neighbors around here, all these people, they go to public school. They go over here to the Ludi School. And I said, I want you to go over here to the Ludi School for at least a year, if not more, a year or two, now that you're educated, now that you're already knowledgeable, way beyond all of these kids here. I want you to go over there so that you can at least get used to the idea that these are the people that you're going to be buying, selling, and trading with and working with for the rest of your life here in the local area. Here, this is your town, this is your community, this is your county. These are the people that you're going to live with. So you might as well get used to it. And she did. And guess what? Over at the Ludi School, whenever they had tests, they would beseech us, make sure that Cole is here on test day. Our daughter would actually raise the test scores for the entire Ludi High School. Our daughter. When she didn't take the test, their scores were down. When she took the test with the rest of the students, she bolstered them up. I mean, that girl was straight A's. Smart as a whip. Homeschooled. And we used the cookie cutter curriculum. We just bought it off the internet. I don't know if you can get any better than that. Girl with straight A's. I don't ever remember that girl scoring less than an A. All right, now let's take a look here at homeschooling spells success. This is an article from CBN News. Homeschoolers aren't immersed in a structured classroom setting amidst dozens of other students. Most of them don't even have credentialed teachers or state-approved curriculum. But homeschoolers, Evan O'Dorney and Caitlin Snarling, don't feel deprived. In fact, their education at home has given them the freedom and passion to pursue the thing that they love to do most, and that's to learn. Now, homeschoolers swept this year's Scripps National Spelling Bee and the National Geographic Spelling Bee, beating the odds. Even though homeschoolers represent about 3% of this nation's students, they comprised 13%, or 36, of the 286 contestants in this year's National Spelling Bee. Okay, now let's put that in perspective. At the National Spelling Bee, 3% of the students took up 13% of the spots. Isn't that special? Now, what's more, first, second, and third place went to homeschoolers in 2000, with one winning the B the following year as well. And they have been in the top 10 every year this decade. So this small 3% minority of students in America, when it comes to spelling and the spelling bees, take up a very disproportionate share of the spots that are selected for the bee. Then they score in the top 10, this little minority. The other 97% compared to this 3%. And they score in the top 10 every year in this decade. How do you explain that? Well, the answer is pretty plain. It's better education at home, isn't it? I mean, isn't that what you want? Didn't you want your child to have a better education than anybody else or better than average? Well, if you want a better than education, if you want your child to be 60% better, then you educate them at home. That's what the national average is. Now, it is true, and I don't doubt it, that there's probably some slackers out there that are home educating their children, and they turn out total dunces. But statistically, if you educate your child at home, he'll do better than public school. He might not do 60% better, but he will do better. Even if it's only 1, 2, or 5, or 10% better, that's better, isn't it? Going on, he said, now this year's favorite homeschooler, Samuel Patel, appeared in his fifth consecutive spelling bee. But Samar ended up giving way to another homeschooler, Evan O'Dorney of Danville, California. And like many homeschoolers, Evan pursued his passions without the restrictions that his traditionally schooled peers face in standardized instruction. He's by no means your one-dimensional dictionary worm. Among his many talents, the child prodigy enjoys composing piano and studies classical music at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. Evan's instrument of choice is the piano because it allows him to play a number of notes simultaneously. I like it because I'm hearing chords in my head and I can get it all out, said the champion. Jennifer O'Dorney helped prepare his son for the contest by going over Latin roots and complex words from the dictionary, but spelling isn't the only thing that triggers Evan's interest. He's like a sponge early on. He always wanted to learn more and more, she said. He's so fun to be with and to work with. Despite his tendency for putting letters together, the gifted 13-year-old has an even greater passion for numbers. His eyes beamed brightly when he shared about his upcoming summer math camp and University of California Berkeley calculus class. My favorite things to do are math and music, he said. And with math, I really like the way the numbers fit together, Evan said. And with the music, I like to let out ideas by composing notes, and the spelling is just a bunch of memorization. Evan also enjoys juggling. Evan had no problem juggling the letters at this year's contest in Washington, D.C., as he correctly spelled Seraphine to take the 2007 title. What does it mean? Small forceps. Now, spelling bees provide an avenue for home learners to demonstrate their academic merit against traditionally schooled students. In a competitive situation like a spelling bee, children can measure their skills, and it gives them a sort of concrete feeling of accomplishment, said Cato Institute education researcher Andrew Colson. 12-year-old Joshua Wright of North Carolina has a love for both spelling and homeschooling. The formidable competitor who won a regional bee touts as his favorite word, which is a fish found in Hawaii. I can't pronounce it or saying, I'm just saying it's about, I don't know, 20 letters long. Josiah's mother doesn't give him any special spelling training because she has her hands full with three younger adopted children diagnosed with Down syndrome and a 2-year-old daughter. I have never taught him spelling, said Ann. We never sat down and said I before E except after C. Every year we would go through the spelling words provided in the curriculum, and he'd just learn to nail them, she said. If there's anyone who appreciates the opportunity to learn from home, it's Josiah. So there's a little story about the National Spelling Bee and the people that are the dominant spellers in America. They're homeschooled. Now, the president, you know, the president and the Secretary of Education come into play here. Listen to this. The president and the secretary's priorities. In 1999, President Bill Clinton and the Secretary of Education, a fellow by the name of Riley, set up seven goals that they wanted to achieve in the educational system. Now, listen to what they said they wanted to do. One, all students will read independently and well by the end of the third grade. All students will master challenging mathematics, including the foundations of algebra and geometry, by the end of the eighth grade. By 18 years of age, all students will be prepared for and able to afford college. Four, all states and schools will have challenging and clear standards of achievement and accountability for all children and effective strategies for reaching those standards. Five, there will be talented, dedicated, and well-prepared teachers in every classroom. Six, every classroom will be connected to the Internet by year 2000, and all students will be technologically literate. And seven, every school will be strong, safe, drug-free, and disciplined. Okay, now those are the seven goals. How many of those seven goals have been achieved over the last 11 years? And the answer is not a single one. Now, they desire this, and they come up to you and they say, this is what we want to do. Well, hell, that's what all of us want to do. Don't we want every child in America to be literate and able to read by age 8, third grade? Now, here's the difference. Every one of these seven indici are achieved in homeschool, and not one of these indici are achieved in public school. Now, there's one exception. Notice they said they wanted every child to go to college and to be able to afford college. No guarantee that you'll be able to afford college. But get this. Remember what Moore said? In their program, not one college of choice has turned down a homeschooler without a full scholarship. So even that is within reach. You know, you can get a full college scholarship if your grades are high enough. My daughter could have gone to college full scholarship had she chosen to. Now, that almost brings us up to 7 out of 7 for homeschool and 0 out of 7 for public school. So tuck that one away in your heart and see where that takes you. All right. President's priorities in education. That's the third item. Hey, we're at the halfway point here. Let me give you a reminder that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law School, or the Law Hour rather, is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. You can download that free general law CD package by going to our archives page. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, they may be political, they sometimes are religious or economic or sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, well, they're mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this local radio station or of this radio network. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about home school. Many times people will tell me that they don't feel competent or qualified to teach home school. And they're always dumbfounded when I tell them, well, on average, the homeschool teachers do not have a college degree, they do not have a teaching credential, and they are not experienced or qualified as teachers. How do you like that? Now, just because you're not competent and qualified as a mechanic doesn't mean that you can't fix your car, doesn't mean that you can't paint a room. You haven't been to college and didn't learn to become a professional painter. You didn't learn to be a professional mechanic. Maybe you're not a professional plumber or carpenter or electrician. But yet, you probably have some of those skills. You can probably wire a simple switch in, or maybe put in an outlet in your living room or bathroom or something like that. Maybe you can paint a room. Maybe you can fix your steps. Maybe you can clear a drain. You know, there's a lot of things that we can learn how to do without going to college and being paid professionals. And school teaching is one of those. And you can learn to teach your children. In fact, God Almighty Himself requires compulsory education. And so the state comes along and they require compulsory education. So both God and the state are agreed that all children should be educated. The distinctions come from God, for instance, requires, He desires, He instructs, He insists that your children have a legal education. He wants them all trained in the Ten Commandments, all of the statutes and judgments and commandments and judgments that He's made over the years. He wants those children educated in that. The state, on the other hand, does not want your children educated in any of the Ten Commandments, laws, statutes, or judgments of God. They want your child educated in the principles that the state curriculum sets down. You know, things like how to lay your neighbor girl in the back of your Chevy van. That's called sex education and drugs and drug abuse. Now, they come out and say, oh, no, we don't want your child to be hooked on drugs. And then where do your children learn drugs and drug abuse? In public school. So that's what I just mentioned to you. So they come to us and they tell us that they want all students to be well-read and will read independently and well by the end of the third grade. But they don't do it. They tell us what we want to hear, and then they don't perform. So they tell us, well, we don't want illegal drugs in our public schools. Hell, they've got about a third of all the children in America on Ritalin right now. Ritalin is cocaine. in case you didn't know. Ritalin, cocaine. One of my students here is a druggist, and I was talking to him one day, and I said, "Well, Todd, what kind of drugs do you sell in the drugstore?" And he said, "Well, we sell heroin, but we don't call it heroin. We call it get a name for that. Like it starts with a P. And then we've got cocaine. We call that Ritalin. See, in the store, we call that Ritalin." And then here's the one I really liked. It was marijuana. We sell marijuana in a drugstore, but we don't call it marijuana. We call it Marinol. Isn't that special? So all of these illegal drugs that you get out here on the street, you can buy in the drugstore with your doctor's prescription. And that's the key. You have to have your doctor's prescription to get these drugs that are out on the street illegal. I said, "What's the price differential?" He said, "Well, marijuana on the street sells for about 20% of what it sells for in the drugstore. So if you want to get high on marijuana and you go to the drugstore, it'll cost you five times more than it'll cost you from Joe, the marijuana dealer, down on the street corner." And then you're wondering why it is that there's so much in the way of illegal drugs out there. And that's because all the people that want marijuana can get it. And the ones that want to buy it for 20% of what it costs in the drugstore, they buy it down on the street corner, on the black market. That's all that boils down to. All right. Now, Diana Mertz, her last name is H-S-I-E-H. Forgive me, Diana, I don't know how to pronounce your last name. So we're going to call you Hi, H-S-I-E-H. Diana High. She wrote a treatise here called The Inefficiency of Public Schooling. And she said, "Despite all the differences between human cultures, the stock of knowledge that a society develops plays an enormous role in its growth. The increases in material well-being and prosperity which arose during the Industrial Revolution were sustained and substantial from the development of the steam engine, a portable source of power, to Eli Whitney's use of interchangeable parts in manufacturing. Today, the development of new drugs have saved countless human lives and alleviated an enormous amount of suffering, and computers have freed people from countless hours of drudgery, and the growth in life expectancy in the last century testifies to the power of new knowledge, even though that figure cannot directly account for the improvements in the quality of life. In order to be useful, new knowledge must not simply have been discovered. It must be applied to particular problems and disseminated to the portion of the population that can use that knowledge. The knowledge that babies' bones will grow straight without swaddling, for example, would have had little effect if most parents had remained unaware of that fact. Additionally, the growth in the stock of knowledge must be preserved over time by passing down that knowledge to the younger generations. The beginning and most basic level of that process is the acquisition of a certain level of knowledge by the young, which will allow them to competently navigate the world. Children who do not learn to read, write, and do basic arithmetic will be limited in profession to the most menial jobs and will be, for the most part, unable to enjoy the prosperity and material well-being of their educated counterparts. Additionally, a whole society benefits from a workforce educated in these basic skills because it will be flexible and easily trained. For example, more efficient and productive than a workforce lacking in these skills. Now, for many years now, the public education system of our nation has been the primary means by which basic knowledge of reading, writing, and mathematics has been disseminated to the vast majority of Americans. Despite its recent disgraceful record in actually teaching children these basics of knowledge required for life, they support and support for the idea of a system of public education is still strong. Compulsory public education is widely regarded as the only alternative to little or no education at all for a large portion of our population and as the system that saved a nation from ignorance and backwardness. Well, to state it more formally, public education is regarded as an efficient response to the problem of widely disseminating to children the basic knowledge necessary for a prosperous society, such as reading, writing, and arithmetic. Any claim to the efficiency of a system of public education ought to be suspect at best. Public schools have increasingly failed to educate students to even these basics like reading and writing, let alone more advanced skills like algebra, despite huge increases in expenditures per student in the past several decades. The ratio of public to private school students also indicates little, if anything, about the efficiency of public schools, since revenues for public education are derived from taxes, not simply from parents of students in public school. The record of public schools in actually educating children and its effect on the economy is very apparent. American students, even our top students, lag far behind those of other industrialized nations in both math and science. David Harmer writes that according to Adult Literacy in America, a 1993 report from the National Center for Education Statistics, nearly half of adult Americans are barely literate, with such limited reading and writing skills that they cannot perform simple tasks like writing a letter, explaining a billing error. The effect of this abysmal education on the economy is clear. Firms have a much less attractive supply of labor, and they're forced to educate workers themselves or attempt to import more educated labor from other countries. USA Today reported that U.S. corporations spend $25 billion a year teaching employees skills that they should have learned in school. Motorola spends $50 million a year teaching 7th grade math and English to 12,500 factory workers. That's half of its hourly employees. Kodak is teaching 2,500 of their employees how to read and write, reported in USA Today. This decline in the education of American students has occurred despite the threefold increase in spending per student from 1959 to 1989. In the 1959-60 school year, the average cost per student in 1989 and $90 was $1,621 per year. But by the 1989-90 school year, the expenditures per student had reached $4,960. Additionally, the United States spends more per student on elementary and secondary education than all but one nation in the world. The data comparing test score ranking of SAT and NAEP and state spending per pupil published by the Wall Street Journal in June of 1993 show, if anything, an inverse correlation between scores and spending. For example, North Dakota ranked first and second on the NAEP and SAT, respectively, but 46th in spending. New York, on the other hand, earned a 22nd and 35th ranking in the NAEP and SAT test scores, even though it outspent 48 states by spending $7,500 per student. So there's no connection between the amount of money being spent per student and the academic results that are achieved. But yet, whenever there's an issue raised, the solution is always advanced, we need to spend more money per student. In sum, no matter whether the comparison is done across time, with other nations, or between states, our public education system is grossly inefficient, spending enormous sums of money on education, and yet only marginally educating its students. Now, unlike in much of the economy, the much higher percentage of students in public rather than private schools cannot be regarded as a reflection of the true preference of parents and students, because parents must pay for public school for their children through taxes, regardless of whether their children actually attend public school. The financial burden of sending a child to private school is much higher than the cost of the private school tuition itself. A poll by the National Association of Independent Schools showed that 51% of parents nationwide would send their children to independent private schools if cost were not a factor. Although it is unclear that exact percentage of students would attend private rather than public school if the true cost of each were paid for by individual families, the ratio of public-private attendance would certainly shift towards private school attendance. Let me pause here and bring up a little subject matter to you. Let's suppose that here in America, we were to take here in Ozark County, let's just take Ozark County here, just as a little microcosm of the nation at whole. I imagine we're somewhere near average. Let's suppose that all of us people here that are paying these taxes to support these schools went ahead and just paid the tax. But instead of spending the tax money on the public school teachers and the public school buildings and all the rest, we just gave the money, $10,000 per student, just give the money to the people who have the children who are sending them to school, and let them spend the money educating their child any way they wanted to. They can send them to public school if they want to, and the public school would charge them $10,000 per student to educate them in public school, which is what we're now paying. Or they would take the same $10,000, spend $2,500 of it, and put their kid in the local Catholic school, keep the other $7,500 and spend it on beer and pretzels. Or take the $10,000, which is being spent on every kid in public school anyway, and then take that $10,000, spend $546, buy a homeschool curriculum, and take $9,500 and spend that on beer and pretzels. Wouldn't we achieve the same end? Now, I know the public school teacher is going to say, oh, no, no, that'll never work. Excuse me. Why not? Spending the same amount of money per child. You see, the reason that the public officials balk at any kind of meaningful change is because it takes money out of their pocket. I mean, they'd have to go to work. Now, if your local Catholic school down here can educate a child for $2,500 a year, how come your local public school can't educate a child for double that, $5,000? Hell, you could give them twice as much money, and they can't educate the kid. He still comes out stupid, and they have to spend twice as much, $10,000. Now, I'm not here telling you where to educate your kid. I just wanted to give you some facts and figures here and let you mull this over. If your IQ is above 70, you ought to be able to see the reality of it just from what I've showed you so far. Now, we taxpayers are being soaked $10,000 to educate every child that's in the public school, and there's 50 million of them in there. So it's around $500 billion a year is what we're spending. And the results we're getting isn't worth writing home about. In fact, the Japanese came over here back in the late 80s, and they took a look at American schools for 2 years, and they came to a conclusion. They wrote a report, and they said, there isn't one thing about the American education system that we've seen in 2 years that's worth emulating in Japan. We didn't find one new trick here that we'd want to take home and use. So that tells you what the Japs think about American education. All right, so why would you and I come up with a higher opinion about our education than the Japanese? They said, we came over, looked at your system, looking for, new tricks. Couldn't find anything. Now that tells you the whole story right there. Now my conclusion would be, and this author, she says that if people had a choice, they, 51%, more than half, would send their children to private school. Now, I would just bet you that the people out there in America who are sending their children in Washington, D.C. and New Orleans, which are the two poorest school systems in America, Washington, D.C. and New Orleans, I'll just bet you that if you took the amount of money that is being collected from the taxpayers in Washington, D.C. and in New Orleans, and just handed that money over to the people, shut down the whole damn school system in those two total failure school systems. Just close them down. Don't lower the taxes. Leave the taxes right where they're at. Make me pay the whole tax bill that I'm paying right now. But instead, just give the money to any parent of a child and say, here's the money, now go educate your kid. He could take the $10,000, take $2,500 out of it, send him to the local Catholic school who would educate the kid to about, they're not quite as good as homeschool, they only go to the 80th percentile from 50 to 80. But just taking 50 and dividing that by 80, what do we get? Well, 62%. Your kid would get a 62% better education on 1/4 the money, and that parent of that child could take that $7,500 windfall and go spend it on, you know, wild women and song whorehouses or whatever the hell, and we would all benefit from it. Every single one of us would benefit because the kid would be smarter. And then when he goes out to get a job, he would be able to read. He wouldn't have to be re-educated by Kodak and Hewlett-Packard. He could actually go to work in the workplace, and he could read, he could write, and he could do basic arithmetic. Now, that isn't going to be done, I'll guarantee you that, and we're going to continue on with public school, and your kid's going to get dumber and dumber as the years go by, and in the final analysis, if you want to educate your child, you're going to have to spend the tax money, and you're going to have to put up with the dumber and dumber kid. And if you want to educate your kid, you're going to have to spend the money to send him to parochial school or buy the homeschooling curriculum. That's the bottom line. That's the way it's going to be done. So all of you poor people out there who cannot afford the private school, just make up your mind your kid's going to grow up dumb in the public school because that's the way your government has programmed it. Now, if you got a couple of nickels to rub together and you don't have the $2,500 to send him to parochial school, but you do have the $500 to buy the homeschool program, we never spent very much time with our daughter here in her education. Once she gets started, I mean, once this kid's 12 years old, you know, I mean, she can plug the computer in and do it herself. And she was homeschooled and self-educated. Homeschooled and self-educated. I just paid the $500 or $600 for the curriculum and let her do the rest. And I just suspect that you can do the same thing. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to close it up here and remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there, and we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.